Welcome to Michigan Sportscast 3.27. We've done hockey, softball, baseball, tennis, some news, even a Super Bowl top five, and talked to Craig Ross about cell phones. It's been a pretty good year. Powerful Al. That is the name that I've come up for you. Because over the course of this year, you have just seen premonitions. And you single-handedly tell me about how you manipulate the Blue Jays as a franchise by whether you watch or not. You talked to me about some things a little bit on Slack and then in person, as we've hung out a few times too, about James Madison. Not the president. I mean, maybe you have thoughts on him as a president. He was short too, right? Maybe you are James Madison.
The state of Michigan never voted for James Madison for president.
Really?
Because the state of Michigan was not a thing when James Madison was running.
Well, I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
That was an old joke we used on the broadcast when James Madison was against Michigan.
Well,
a few years ago.
You got me on it, and I should have known better, because I think I know some about early American history. But anyway, you were talking to me about them as seedings, and you went on and on about this, but they had a huge upset this weekend. Actually, they're playing today. I don't even know what the score is, but they did beat Oklahoma, and you...
Then they beat Oklahoma State.
And they beat Oklahoma State. But you laid out for me 2 weeks ago what they needed to do and how you could beat Oklahoma and what Michigan would have needed to do and Washington, whoever, and you were completely right.
Yep. I mean, it was pretty much your pitcher pitches the game of their lives. Because they pitch the game of their lives, Oklahoma only gets 3 runs. And as a result, you need to get 4. And they did. And they got it off of big hits. They got 2 homers. And then there you go.
Right. But it was the home runs thing.
Yep.
Which feeds into the other thing that you were talking about in softball, where average and doubles and those sorts of things are great. But what you really want
is
someone who can hit the ball out of the yard.
Yep. Because great pitchers are not going to give up many base runners, period. You don't want to mess with runners in scoring position and getting 3 hits to get a run in. You want one hit to get a run in.
So
a great pitcher's only giving up 5 hits, you want to maximize what those hits are.
Sure. Which is not as true in baseball.
No, because they give up more base runners, and great pitchers aren't as dominant. You don't see too many sub-1 ERA pitchers in baseball. Whereas,
hey, speak
whereas
for yourself.
Every great softball team has a pitcher right around an ERA of 1.
You could come to the National League East and find
one. The great teams have 2. Let's be frank here.
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying. Did you watch any of that game?
I did. They're playing right now. I believe Oklahoma's going to win the game, so it's going to be a winner-take-all game in a little bit to see who goes to the finals.
What kind of odds do you give James Madison?
Not great, because they just used Odyssey Alexander, and she is going to be more tired for the second game.
And they're going to pitch her again, right?
I mean, they have to.
There's nothing else you can really do,
yep.
Right? Yeah. I mean,
if Oklahoma was going to not win the championship, it had to happen last night.
Against UCLA.
Because they played UCLA in the loser bracket, which is just wild.
That is wild.
And UCLA gave them a good run but couldn't do it. And now I feel like Oklahoma's going to win the national championship.
But the girl for Alabama pitched like a perfect
game. There is a chance Alabama could stop them. The problem is they're on the other side of the bracket, so then they have to beat them twice out of 3 games.
Yeah.
I thought Oklahoma could lose if 2 different teams beat them once.
Had their, James Madison.
When James Madison beat them once, I was like, okay, now they could lose to UCLA and be done. But then it didn't happen. I don't feel great about any team beating them twice out of 3 games.
Well, that makes sense.
Which is probably fair. If no team can beat you twice out of 3 games, you should probably win
the
national champion.
Which,
it just sucks because Oklahoma wins a lot, and I would wish other teams would win.
But shout out to
Patty Gasol. They're a great program, and they've built great teams.
But that's not like a long-term thing. I mean, this has been relatively recent.
I mean, they've won 3 titles in like the last decade. Might be,
but most of it hasn't a lot of it been in the last like few years?
Yeah, I mean, I think their first one was in 13.
Okay.
I think it was like 13, 16, and 18 maybe they have, something like that.
Okay. So it was over the course of time. Yeah, interesting. But UCLA is always there too. I mean, they're always a top 5 seed, and now Alabama, I mean, I think Alabama won a title or got really, really close one year or something. So now that the SEC has figured out softball, it's kind of like, oh, well, that's over too, to a certain extent. All right, that was our opener. The great and powerful Al. So when you see him around town, that's what you should change your Twitter handle to be. No?
No.
I think so. All right. The great and powerful Alexander?
Sure.
Okay. We're going too far down that road. All right. Well, I guess I've just been trying to put off going to what we need to talk about. I mean,
there's the nothing really to talk about.
The regional has ended. Michigan is not over yet.
The regional hasn't ended. Michigan has ended.
Michigan has
as
ended.
As we're taping this, we don't know who's coming out of the region yet.
No, I mean, I assume it's going to be Notre Dame. Did you
probably
see any of those scores?
Yeah.
10-0 and, like, was it 26-3?
Yeah.
I guess, like, okay, fine. Whoever can beat them twice, but I'm guessing that when you give up 26 runs in a game to someone, the odds of you beating them two times in a row are not great, especially if you've used your two best pitchers already. So it's probably going to be Notre Dame, but I don't think that either of us like thought that Michigan was going to come out of this regional.
No.
But I thought that they could win a game, maybe two.
You would have liked to see a little more fight, but...
And they had a chance on Friday. Like,
yeah.
That was... I mean, we watched that game together. It was... They had a chance through at least Hadjer's tenure in the game. He pitches... I think... I mean, his stats aren't amazing because he does give up the four runs. But he goes 6 innings, 9 hits, 4 runs, a walk, 9 Ks. This isn't his, obviously, greatest pitching performance that we've seen. But UConn is arguably as good as the team that Michigan has faced this year.
Probably.
Or better.
Probably better.
So, I mean, you get that kind of performance, and it's workable because you look at the lineup and you think you got some of you guys that hit home runs. You got guys that are a bunch of number of them that are hitting over 300. They can get on base. They do steal. I mean, they can score runs, but not on Friday. And
you know, it was tough because it felt like Michigan always had a lot of guys on base, but a lot of them were through walks and hit by pitches, which.
Well,
are not very efficient kinds of runs, and at the
right.
end of the day, they just couldn't get actual hits, and generally speaking, you need actual hits to score.
Generally, usually.
You can get a walk, a stolen base, a bunt, and a sack fly. That gets a run home.
That an error, sure.
Yeah.
I completely agree.
I mean, how many hits did they have in the game total? Three?
Two.
Two?
They had, I mean, that was going to be the next point that we'll talk about in a second. I just want to go through a little bit to finish up on Hadjer, is that... You know, he has that tough luck run where with two outs,
yeah.
He hits a screaming liner to left field, and I think Flores gets there. He just doesn't make the catch. Now, it's not an easy catch, but it's a catch that, you know, someone who plays any sort of defense in baseball is going to be like, I can make that play.
Yeah.
And he was there. He just didn't go his way.
And when Hadjer got knocked around later in the game, it was a lot of, I mean, it wasn't super hard contact, too.
Well, I think the first run was,
yeah,
like, there
yeah.
was no way to avoid that second run, but then he has two outs,
yeah.
and the infield is back, and you get this, like, Baltimore chop off the plate that
yeah.
takes forever, and Molfetta can't get the ball over to first. Not necessarily his fault, it's just an unlucky play. Like, he gets the contact he's looking for in the right spot. And then two runs come around because Obertop is like frustrated at
yeah.
the call, and then it's 4-1. And at that point, it wasn't over, but it was pretty much over, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the way that Michigan was hitting, they wore down Connecticut's starter enough.
Yeah,
but their bullpen was really good.
Yeah,
and
they were a good team, played really well, and
I mean, there's a reason why they beat Michigan 3 out of 4 times last year.
Yep.
I mean, they have made the tournament and. Done decently well in regionals. So Burton hits the solo home run to tie the game 1-1.
That's about it.
And it's kind of exciting.
They had one other moment where guys were on and they lined a ball to left and the player for UConn totally misplays it and then bails himself out.
And leaps up and makes like this ridiculous
yeah.
Sports Center catch. But the reason it's not is because he like creates the whole mess himself.
Yeah. And then they had a situation in the sixth where you get a hit and run that backfires and a guy's
yeah.
thrown out to third
yeah.
and you could have gotten him home on a sack fly like one batter later.
They did run
but,
into a couple outs.
But if they get that sack fly, they go up 2-1 and Michigan's bullpen didn't do enough.
Right. And
Hadjer didn't do quite enough to win with that.
Bertram did get a double. So they did have a guy in scoring position with a base hit to score him. Obviously, you know, that didn't happen. The thing that is the frustrating thing, I think, most about this game is they got hit by pitches 3 times and 6 walks. I mean, that's 9 free passes, essentially, that if you get any regular amount of hits in a game, you get even 6-7 hits in the game, which isn't, like, unheard of, especially for this lineup. I mean, they probably have at least 4 or 5 runs. And they have a chance. And, you know, they didn't because they couldn't hit the ball. And it's unfortunate. They bring in Proctor, I think, but he got knocked around a little bit. The weird question to me was they did bring in Isaiah Page, and that was a little bit of an iffy decision, I thought, by Backich because, you know, Page is one of the few guys that probably could start game 4 or 5 because they have, what, you know, three and a half starters that they've used this year. You know, Denner isn't the most finished product or the guy that you definitely want, but he's someone that can start a game and has pitched well this year at times. And Page is a guy that can probably give you three, four innings in a long start again and give you decent ones. I mean, he pitched game two of the championship series. You know what that's, you know what he's becoming is the Spike Albrecht.
Yeah.
Of Michigan baseball, where it's going to be his thing is, oh yeah, he was the game two starter
yeah.
that gave them a chance.
It definitely seemed like Eric Backich was going all out to try and win a game that it did not seem like they had a shot of winning.
Right, and they weren't eliminated yet. And no. there's still a road back. It's a long road back, yep. but there's still a road back. And, you know, and then they bring in Jack White, and at that point, it's pretty much over. I do want to give a shout-out to Christian Bullock, who made...
A great catch.
A phenomenal catch. It looked like maybe he mistimed his jump and, like, kind of fell off of his foot the wrong way, but gets to a ball and makes a phenomenal play. And that's, you know, other than the Burton shot, that's pretty much the highlight of Game 1, I would say.
Pretty much.
Game 2, Michigan is into the loser's bracket, probably a game earlier than we were hoping, at least. They faced Central Michigan, who we thought had a shot to beat Notre Dame. That was not the case. That was 10-0. And I think Notre Dame's ace, Bertrand, went 9 innings, a complete game, just mowed them down. That Cavadas, I think is his name. I think he hit a grand slam yesterday. I mean, he probably has a ton of RBIs because, I mean, they scored 26 runs. But he had a big home run the day before. He has, like, I think at least 3 home runs in the regional. But so Central Michigan draws Michigan in that game. Michigan obviously throws Cameron Weston, and he goes 4 2/3, 8 hits, 5 runs, a walk, 2 strikeouts. This is the Weston that we didn't want to get.
Not great.
Nope, and that's exactly what
Michigan got an early run, and then it was all downhill from there.
And again, you have a Flores shot in the first, and you're yep. kind of excited. They get an Obertop solo shot in the ninth, and they do get 7 other hits, but they couldn't really string them together. They had a chance where it was like, I think they were down 6-1, 7-1, bases loaded, nobody out in the seventh. And you're thinking, hey, a couple hits here. And we've seen them put up crooked numbers in innings. So, you know, you're into the depths or more the depths of Central Michigan. And you're thinking, okay, you know, few shots here. And they go, I think they go caught looking and then double play. And it literally turns into nothing. It's just not what we hoped that you could do hitting the ball in a 2-game series. It's 2 games, and if they played 2 more, they might get 20 hits, but it's not what you needed. And they have the hitters. I thought we talked about the lineup all year. It's a pretty solid lineup. No superstars, but it's pretty deep. And they just didn't hit enough.
You know, as we step away from this game that Michigan loses, what was the final score? 10-1?
8-2.
8-2, okay. You have to wonder to what extent the Big Ten was a funhouse mirror this season.
That's a really great analogy. I like that. Funhouse mirror?
Yeah.
That's good. That's like your Goofus comment from earlier in the year.
Yeah, it's right out of a Scooby-Doo episode. But anyway, you know, how good was Michigan really?
Yeah.
I think that's a question worth asking and without the non-conference to really know. You know, I thought in softball, the Big Ten did an okay job in terms of, I think, Michigan... I think that was about what we thought could happen.
Yeah, I mean, they could have won. They easily could have won that Washington yeah. regional.
But like we thought. But this was a little bit more of a rude awakening. I mean, it's yeah. also baseball. You know, maybe it just wasn't their weekend. I don't really know. But wasn't great showing. And now, you know, you go into an off season where there will be some questions. But, and ones we don't necessarily have a ton of answers for.
Yeah. To your Big Ten point, I think Nebraska won a game. I don't think they beat Arkansas, but I'm pretty sure Nebraska won a game. I thought Maryland won a game. Maybe it was an elimination game, so they, you know, beat a 4 or something. But I don't think either one. I mean, I don't think Arkansas is losing.
See, Nebraska beat Northeastern 8-6.
Yeah,
they lost to Arkansas 5-1. They're currently playing NJIT right now, and they are winning 2-1. As for Maryland, they are the last team remaining besides East Carolina in that regional.
Really?
They lost to Charlotte to start,
mm-hmm.
then they beat Norfolk State, then they beat Charlotte, and then they will be playing ECU twice, and they have to win both to emerge.
Okay. So
both won games.
And that's kind of like, I think where Maryland is kind of where we're hoping Michigan would be, is not necessarily win the first 2 games, but maybe beat UConn. You can lose to Notre Dame, and then if you can maybe win again and get back to have a chance to beat Notre Dame twice.
Yeah.
You're probably not going to, but I would have been like, yeah, that's I'm okay with that. You essentially get to what, the round of 32, more or less. And they were, I put down a note here that I thought they got a little unlucky to a certain extent. They did run into some outs, which were kind of goofy. But I don't really hate the aggressiveness at this level because you're depending on great catcher play. You're depending on the pitchers like not throwing wild pitches and stuff. But they just weren't good enough. And my summation of this is they kind of played like the second to last team in the tournament, which is what you said last weekend is they were.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it ended up being. So it was a fun Big Ten season, I think, for them. It was enjoyable because I think they were about as good as anyone, and there were a few games you wish you could have back that they could have come closer to potentially winning the Big Ten title.
Yeah.
But they finished top two or three. It's Bakich has built a program, and it's not like some of the old days where they're going to maybe go 500 and you're like, am I paying attention to Michigan baseball this year? We'll see how much time I have. It's worth following at least when they're on TV.
Yeah, I don't have any notes on incoming recruits because I tried to do that a few years ago and didn't go super well in terms of I don't have a perfect game account. Also, there are guys in the class and then some of them get drafted and they don't end up coming.
Right.
And some end up going to community college. I mean, it's just a mess.
It's
so
a lot. Yeah.
I just wait till we see what the roster says and then I'll research the players.
But we'll go through some of them. Here, this is a good probably transition into looking ahead, but I just wrote down some basic things. You can give me your takes on if you want, or not, I suppose. you can mute yourself if you'd like. But I had probably graduating and not coming back. Now, this is the weird thing when I was doing this, is I was kind of talking to the person I was sitting with, and I was like, the COVID thing is really weird, right? Like, seniors can come back next year if you manage the scholarships, right?
Yeah.
So Michigan has, what, four or five grad transfers, though, right? They have Sems. Bullock is a fifth year, so he's kind of in that measure. Molfetta and Pace. So those guys are probably gone, I would guess, unless they want to play a sixth year of college ball.
Yeah.
Right?
Probably.
I mean, in your mind, are you kind of thinking, more or less those guys are gone?
Yeah.
Okay. Drafted guys, I wrote down as, like, you mentioned that Hadjer's was on draft boards earlier.
He has been on draft boards. I would suspect he will get drafted.
Do you think he will get drafted at a level that he will sign that contract? Or is this like a throw-in late that he might want to
Let me pull up
back?
An MLB draft board right now.
Okay.
You can keep talking.
Okay. And the other guy in that context for me was Willie Weiss. Because both those guys are juniors, which that's how it works, right? You either get drafted coming into your freshman year, and you either go or you stick around for 3 years. And then you have a chance to get redrafted at the end of that year. That's the baseball draft, essentially. And I think you can even get drafted after the end of your senior year if you don't
sign.
Because that was Jimmy Kerr, right?
Yes.
When he wasn't drafted, but didn't the Tigers take him late?
Correct.
All right.
Later rounds.
Right. But at that point, all right, you're going, because what else are you going to do?
I mean, Willie Weiss is a bit of a question because relief pitchers don't get drafted very high in general. Depends on
not even closers?
Closers don't tend to go in like the first three, four, five rounds.
And is that sort of the cutoff?
No, you can, I mean, guys can do whatever, but.
No, but like, sort of like the, you know, am I going to come back if rule?
Yeah, it's just so case by case.
Okay,
I mean,
that's fair.
You know, Kyle Funkhauser, who's now a relief pitcher for the Tigers, he was a first round pick in 20 some year. I don't remember what year it was,
sure.
But he chose not to sign. He felt he was lowballed.
Yeah.
And then he came back, and then he did a lot worse his senior year, got drafted a lot lower by the Tigers.
Okay.
So that can happen. And, I mean, trying to remember who it was years ago, the number one overall pick, Aiken, that was his name, right, that didn't sign with Houston?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that can happen.
Okay.
It's kind of random.
Well, yeah, and you may
And a lot of the other thing about the baseball draft, too, is that it all is about money.
Yeah.
I mean, most famously, Justin Verlander ended up in a Detroit Tigers uniform because the Padres were cheap and didn't want to pay him.
Yeah.
Because college guys, you have to give them more money than high school guys, and they picked Matt Bush, a high school prospect, and just last draft, Austin Martin, if you remember him from Vanderbilt, who
yes.
everyone thought was going to go number two, he went number five.
Because guys didn't want to pay him.
Because Baltimore in particular didn't want to pay him. And you get certain amount of money to spend on all your picks.
Right.
So they spent lower on the top pick to then splurge on the later.
Right.
It's very strange.
Yeah. But none of these guys are like high-end guys.
No,
I mean, these guys are early-ish mid-round picks, at least, you know, in the first, 10 rounds or something like that. I don't know. I'm giving you a number. But it's not looking at it more for their careers as much as it's looking at it like, okay, these are the guys that could get drafted and potentially leave Michigan. I'm not talking about their incoming class. I'm talking about the guys on the team. I don't think anyone else is going to get drafted off this team. Do you? In terms of, like, maybe some of the grad transfers. But, I mean, I'm talking about from, like, who are juniors.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah. Do you have a we've
this
talked
is,
about
this is a major pain.
Okay.
Trying to find these so many of these. Preseason, Hadger was definitely in the range that he was going to get drafted. I don't know about right now, but we'll see what happens.
Okay, well, was what he gave you this year acceptable from a Michigan perspective? Not from, like, a draft perspective, but from, like, a number one starter perspective in the Big Ten?
Yeah, he was fine in the Big Ten.
But, I mean, obviously, if he comes back next year, he's probably still there.
Yes.
Number one. Okay. Yeah. So let's just say hypothetically they lose those two guys. Maybe they get them both back. I don't know. That would be great from a Michigan perspective. But Weston's back. He's a sophomore, right? Denner is back. He's either sophomore or junior. Both those guys are going to be back, whatever you think of Denner. And then the other guy I wrote down, who we didn't really hear much about, you know, but pitched in that tournament run, Walker Cleveland, is still on the team. I don't know much about his year. He hasn't really thrown at all. I guess I could see him being hurt or something, because he did get time a couple years ago and was kind of effective in certain ways as like a midweek starter. So there's a couple guys there. Page probably back, Dragani, guys like White, Wood, Proctor. So they have guys on that have pitched a lot, that have had some upside, few in the bullpen, a couple of starters at least, potentially their entire rotation depending on Hadger, right?
Yeah.
And then potentially Weiss in the bullpen. Looking at the lineup, Elliott's a sophomore, Flores, Burton, Obertop, all those guys are sophomores, will be back, and those are all pretty good players. They all hit, I think, really well. Obertop struck out a lot, and his average wasn't as great, but the first three guys, I think, hit over 300 and had each had a little bit of power. I know we talked to Craig a little bit, and he's like, he thinks Tito Flores is probably a major league player for, you know, take that however much you want to take that, I guess. He's an Indians fan, so maybe he sees him as a pitcher. But and then Riley Bertram, who, again, played on that team a couple years ago, has played, I would say, a similar role this year. We're just second baseman. Can he play? He probably can play short, I would guess.
Probably, yeah.
And then Jordan Rogers, right, is the other guy, a center fielder and also a catcher. Have you ever seen a weirder split?
I mean, Eric Haas for the Tigers this season has been playing catcher in left field, so. Evan Gattis played catcher in right field.
But don't you think that right field is different than center field?
Generally speaking, yes.
Yes.
But, I mean, so many baseball players are catchers at one point in time.
That's interesting.
I mean, that's why we talk about, and many of the weeks of this podcast, we've talked about how, like, these rosters have, like, eight catchers listed, but only
well,
two
but
actually catch.
But they're usually, like, a slash.
Yeah.
It's not
yeah.
like, you know,
yeah.
you actually bring in eight full-time
yeah, no,
catchers.
Yeah, no. No, it's every... Most good baseball players were a catcher at one point in their life because it's an important position. And if you know what you're doing on a baseball field, you're asked to do it at one point in time in your
sure.
youth.
Sure. I understand that. So that's kind of an experienced core, I think, right? Like, you could build from that with
yeah.
a couple of freshmen or some sophomores. Or Velasquez even played a little bit, got some hits, looked like he could play a little bit. Zimmerman played for a time, I think, in the outfield. Didn't he have, like, a ridiculous home run streak where he hit, like, three straight at-bats
yeah,
or something
yeah.
like that? And then Marty played a little bit.
Yep. Early in the year.
Earlier, yeah. And then they have... Dan Blomgren, who was Jack Blomgren's kid brother.
Yeah.
And I think he was pretty highly touted. So he was a freshman this year, but I don't think he played at all.
I don't think so.
So they have some guys. And they've also, the other thing that's interesting is they have also had a number of sophomores step up this year who didn't have as prominent a role last year. We could see that happen again. I think they had a pretty nice class last year coming in, but not many. You didn't have a ton of like freshmen playing right
away.
Well,
in college baseball, sometimes guys take a little bit longer to actually do something, especially pitchers.
Yeah. So we could see that. I think there, given what we've talked about, basic guesses here, I think they're probably going to need either a third baseman or a shortstop, one of those two. You know, we talked about Bertram has played some short. Blomgren is an infielder. I don't know, you know, where they would play him. I don't think that Malfetta's defense is anything that they're going to overly miss. But, you know, they could play somebody there and bring in a shortstop. I know they do have some recruits. I've heard some noise, but like you, I'm like you. I don't have an account to some of those sites. And, you know, you just never know who's actually going to show up because of drafting and all those other things. So they probably will need a third baseman or shortstop, maybe a catcher. Obviously, Mazur's, I guess, again, they could bring any of these guys back. It's just a very weird year in trying to project that. But Rodgers did play some catcher. He didn't really towards the end of the year, though, right? I mean, it was just kind of spelling.
It was Mazur the whole season.
Mazur pretty much the whole season. So they'll probably need some version of a catcher. And then I would say an outfielder, maybe two. You'd think that Flores and Elliott are going to man the corner spots. But then potentially Rodgers slides into center, or they move one of those guys over. They get another one. Zimmerman played some left field, was it, I think?
Yeah.
At times. And then potentially starting pitcher, depending on Hadjer, maybe two.
I think the one question I have going into next season is, was this the Wile E. Coyote year, to use an old Brianism, with regards to the pitching? Because the farther we get away from Chris Fetter, the more questions I will have. If only because I am pretty convinced now that Chris Fetter is the real deal.
Because of what he's done with the Tigers.
Yes. I mean, what he has shown at the MLB level and just how much better Casey Mize and Tarek Skubal are right now than they were just 2 months ago.
In what ways?
Let alone a year ago.
In what ways are they better?
I mean, Tarek Skubal couldn't go an inning without giving up a homer at the start of the season.
So is it
control? He has an ERA under 3 in the last month.
Okay, but those are like big picture things. I mean,
I'm not much into pitching mechanics. I can't tell you the intricacies of what was fixed.
I mean, is he like walking fewer guys?
Yeah. I mean, they're just everyone, every single pitcher on the roster is vastly better now than they were 2 months ago and they were a year ago.
Do you think that's a lot of what's going on?
And the hitters aren't getting a lot better, but the pitching has gotten ton better.
And that's why they're winning more games?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, that's fair, and that's very interesting.
I mean, it's gotten to the point where some very, very smart Tigers people I talk to on Twitter and stuff are basically like, let's just call up all our prospects and have them just be on the bench so they can work with Chris Fetter. Because
instead of some other pitching coach in double A.
Yeah, because the Tigers' development in the minors is a joke. So
you might as well
get this guy to fix them.
Even if they're not even pitching, just have them work with them on the side.
Call them up and then injure them and then put them on the 60-day IL and then just have Chris Fetter
just
fix them.
Just have like a classroom where Chris Fetter goes to every day and just works with everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that is interesting. I think the thing with, and maybe this is a college baseball thing, you've been more in tune with it the last few years than I have, despite me following it more the last couple. It doesn't seem like Michigan does it. It doesn't seem like they don't have talented guys. Like, they have guys with stuff or speed, but the issue comes with throwing strikes.
And that's college baseball.
So that's just going to be. I don't remember the specifics of, like, the Henry, Kauffman, Criswell trio. Were they in that same mold of where they didn't walk a lot of guys?
I would have to look at their stats.
I would assume that they probably didn't, as you said, like that's college baseball. So that is an interesting question you pose about, is this the Wile E. Coyote year where you get the leftovers? And I mean, we did see some drop off from Dragani, right? I mean, he was kind of a guy we thought would be a starter and in the end became sort of like
you do have injury questions about him.
Because he
general.
Missed time. Yeah.
Yeah, but it'll be interesting to monitor that moving forward.
How do you think Hadjer was last year in the very shortened season versus this year?
It's impossible to tell.
Too hard to tell?
I think he looked about the same, personally, which is fine.
Which is fine, yeah. And because he was in his third year, which is, for good college baseball players, that's their final year, right? Yeah. Generally? So, overall, I think it was a fun season. They were an enjoyable watch. You certainly had your moments like your Michigan State call.
Yep.
They had fun game. They had that couple of fun games in East Lansing. They had those games against Ohio State in the rain.
Yep.
The Indiana series was pretty good. They got that nice win in Lincoln. They had that, what, 20-something run game in Minnesota. There's a lot to look back and say it was enjoyable. Michigan baseball is never going to be Michigan football or even hockey, to that matter.
Thank God it's not Michigan football.
Thanks, Brian. Where you're expected to compete at a national level, and when you're not going to the World Series or the BCS or the Frozen Four every year, it's like, you know, ring necks and all that.
Hey, I'd take Michigan football going to the BCS next year.
Are you trying to, like, bring down the podcast? Are you, like just trying to, like, lower it out on our...
If we can go to the 2021 BCS championship game, I'll be pretty happy.
I mean, okay. Great. I will, too, Alex. I will take a win over Ohio State next year, too, while we're at it. I think it's, like, a program that can be fun and watchable, especially if it, you know, it's going to outlast basketball and hockey. They're going to seemingly have enough talent year in and year out now to at least contend for the title and at least get you out to the stadium, or, you know, hopefully get a few people to buy BTN Plus, or so that you can actually see the games. And
maybe it depends on if BTN Plus is cooperating on a given day.
Well, you might not get the graphics. I didn't say anything about that. And you won't have, like, the illustrious voice of Alex Drain, like,
the game might
overlay.
Be filmed from the third base dugout.
Well, instead of the highway or the bridge above the field hockey venue. Well, are you opposed to watching on BTN and calling games? Like from
it would be
from,
very hard
from grad school
yeah,
next
that,
year.
That'd be impossible.
Yeah. Well, so that's probably out, I guess. But anyway, it was a fun season for baseball. It was enjoyable. I wish it would have ended a little bit differently. They could have gotten a couple tournament wins, but it was worth the while, I think.
Yep.
Closing time, open all the doors and let you out into the world. Closing time, turn all of the lights on over every boy and every girl. Closing time, one last call for alcohol, so finish your whiskey or beer. Closing time, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. I know who would want to take me home. I know who would want to take me home. I know who would want to take me home.
Craig Ross is, I believe, currently on an airplane. Hopefully he's on an airplane and not, like, in the ocean somewhere. But he is on his way to it for his vacation. So I'm going to have to step in and talk for him regarding this. But we thought that in our last segment, or last scheduled segment, we'll get into the schedule of what we're going to do this summer and everything towards the end. So stick around. We're going to bury this lead. But we thought we would do an update because the French Open is, what, half over-ish?
Yep.
Getting close to it. And we would go through the guys that you and Craig drafted, even though he's not here. So I don't have a good Craig Ross impersonation, but I can go through who you guys have picked. My pick is still around, my one and only on both sides, Rafael Nadal. Have you seen any of his matches?
Yep.
Has he looked good?
He's looked like Nadal.
Does he look like he's going to win the tournament?
He's the favorite, but I think someone could beat him.
Okay. Well, so let's go through the men's side first. Craig has Djokovic.
Djokovic still playing.
How does he look?
He's looked fine. He's going to be playing most likely. Trying to think of who he's playing next. Is he playing Schwartzman?
I have the women's bracket up.
Okay.
So I'm going to switch over to the men's bracket.
He's going to play someone in the fourth round, and then he would have played Federer in the quarters, but Federer this morning chose to withdraw.
He's playing Musetti.
Okay, yes, the 19-year-old Italian guy.
Should he beat him?
Yeah. And then he would play Berrettini in the next round, and then Nadal in the round after that.
Which would be the semis.
Yeah.
So what do you think of Djokovic winning this?
Not super optimistic.
Okay. But you think probably getting to face Nadal, or does he lose to Berrettini?
It would be surprising if he lost to Berrettini.
Okay. The next guy that Craig drafted is Zverev.
Zverev is still playing.
He's actually playing currently.
Yeah, he's playing to Shikori right now. Is that match still going?
It is, and he won, and he's up 6-4, 6-1, and they're starting the third set, so he's probably going to win that.
Yep. I think Zverev will be in the semis against either Medvedev or Tsitsipas.
Uh-huh. Okay, and what do you think of him making the finals?
Got a shot.
But not...
I would pick Tsitsipas over him in a semifinal.
What about Medvedev?
Well, Medvedev, who is he Craig's next pick?
He
was the pick after that.
He's coming up.
I mean, Medvedev has played really well in this tournament. I mean, a terrible clay court player in his career, but he's putting it all together. And, I mean, it's worth remembering Federer, the first few times he played at the French Open, didn't go very far. And then suddenly he was making the finals every
Learning
year.
How to play on the different surface.
And Medvedev's playing really well. So
do you take Zverev over him in this situation?
If Zverev plays Medvedev, I'm taking Zverev.
Are you?
Yep.
And who do you think is the biggest challenger he has? Obviously, he's going to beat probably Nishikori, and then he's going to face Davidovich Fokina.
Yeah, no one knows who that is.
Okay, so the odds are that he's probably going to make it?
Yeah, he's going to be in the semis.
And maybe even the finals.
He could be in the final.
Okay. The third guy was Ruud.
Casper Ruud went out earlier than I thought.
To this Davidovich guy that we
correct.
Were just yes, mentioned.
It was a tough five-set match.
Oh, yeah.
Came up a little bit short.
What did you... I mean, did
I,
you
yeah,
think
I didn't
he,
get to see
did
that.
Did you think he probably would have, should have gone further?
Yeah.
But...
I think he's still learning to play in Grand Slam formats. And
got it. All right. And so that was his third pick. His fourth one was Federer.
Federer.
Who
played really well, but just chose to withdraw today because he's not ready for this amount of tennis. I think he honestly thought he was going to lose before this.
Really?
I think he signed up to play a couple matches. And
figuring
then,
he was going to lose.
Yeah.
Realizing he wasn't and wasn't going to risk it.
Yeah.
Do you?
Because he played a tough grinding match yesterday and he just said, I don't care about this tournament. I don't like this tournament. I'm just here to play.
Is that what he said?
Well, I mean, remember his quote was, I'm not going to win the French Open.
Because I'm not, I mean, even if I keep winning, I will walk away.
He didn't play the French Open in 16, 17, 18.
He didn't even play it?
Or last year. No, he's only played it once in the past 5 years before this.
Didn't he win it?
No, he made the semis.
He's never won it?
He won it in 09.
Oh, a long, long time ago. Okay.
I mean, this is not the tournament he likes. Yeah. So he was just here to get some matches in. And he played well. I mean, he beat Marin Cilic in the second round, and then he won a tough grinding match yesterday.
Did you watch any of his matches?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I watched every one of them. Hmm. He was moving well. He was serving well. I think he'll be tough in Wimbledon, but that's what he's focused on.
Okay.
So he didn't want to push himself too hard now.
So you weren't surprised when he...
McEnroe was talking about this today and was saying that Federer should have withdrew from the tournament at match point yesterday.
Like, as soon as he was going to win, just say, I'm out, because I'm not going to play anyway.
And I want
you
the guy.
And I beat you, but...
I want there to be a match in the next round.
Right.
Because now there won't be a match in the next round.
Did anyone bring that up to Federer?
Well, he said in the post game, and last night he alluded to this.
Okay.
He said, you know, I don't know if I'm going to keep playing. I'm going to talk to my team. And then they...
So he maybe hadn't made that decision yet.
I think deep down he knew what was going to happen, but I guess he wanted to talk to his trainers and people and stuff. So,
do you think that had he decided to play this one and face Djokovic, do you think he would have just not even faced Djokovic, or do you think he would have wanted to take a shot?
I don't know. It's tough to say.
Okay. Obviously, from a Federer fan like you are, you would have liked to see it.
I mean, he's not out here to keep winning small tournaments. He's here to do one thing, which is see if he can win any more Grand Slams. And he knows that's only going to happen on hard courts or grass courts. So
sort of like Tiger before his accident.
Yeah.
Like he was there to win majors. Yeah. No, that makes sense. So that was Craig's fourth pick. But that was, a worthwhile fourth pick.
It's a good pick.
Because he got, three or four wins out of it?
And I think he could have beaten Berrettini. Would have been close.
Okay. And then his fourth pick you already mentioned was Medvedev, who's probably having, aside from like winning a huge tournament, probably one of the most impressive tournaments of his life.
Yeah, Medvedev is probably going to be world number one by the end of the year, thanks to this.
I mean, this is as far as he's ever gone, right?
By far, at this tournament.
And have you watched any of it? Because I'm looking at his numbers. In his third round, he wins 6-4, 6-2, 6-4, which is...
He's looked really good.
And then he wins 6-2, 6-1, 7-5 against Garin.
Garin? Yeah.
Okay, and how is he?
He's just a generic player. I mean, Medvedev has played really well, and he's going to be playing likely Tsitsipas in the quarterfinals, which is going to be fascinating.
He is going to be facing him.
And Tsitsipas is a better clay court player. I think he should win that match. But Medvedev, I believe, is 6-1 all time against Tsitsipas. So it's going to be, you know.
Have they ever faced on clay?
Yes, once. And that was Medvedev's one win, ironically.
Really?
Or one of Medvedev's wins.
Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of fun.
One of Medvedev's six wins.
That's kind of interesting, isn't it?
It is interesting. It could be mental. They played at the last slam in Australia, but that was right after Tsitsipas had beaten Nadal in a five-set, like, 4.5 hours.
And he was probably
He had nothing left in the tank.
Yeah.
Medvedev just easily. So this is going to be an interesting match. And this is not what Tsitsipas wanted to see. He wanted to see Medvedev lose early and then coast into the semis.
And face Garin?
Yeah. Didn't happen.
Well, is that a circle match for you where you're like, this is one to pay attention to? I assume it'll probably be featured.
Probably, but you never know.
Yeah. So those are Craig's picks. How would you rate them? I mean, he's still got three guys going.
He's done really well.
I mean, he probably has potentially one, maybe even two finalists.
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah. Do you think one of those three guys between Djokovic, Zverev, and Medvedev gets to the final?
I still think that the only guy who's going to beat Nadal here is Tsitsipas.
So if Medvedev wins, it's Nadal's to lose.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
If Medvedev beats Nadal at the French Open on clay for his first Grand Slam, that'll be the peak of his career, and he'll never do anything better than that. He could win 20 more slams, and that will be the greatest achievement of his life.
Give me something in sports that would be equivalent to that.
Appalachian State beating Michigan.
Thanks for bringing that. Like, why are you still here? Why are we your friends? I don't know. Why do I call you anymore? All right, so let's go through your guys. You had Tsitsipas.
I'm very happy with that pick. He's playing really well.
And Craig complimented you on that profusely, right? He said that might be one of the picks of the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's just playing so well. He played Isner the other day, and Isner was playing terrific, and he muscled through it. And then he was playing, was it PCB today?
Carreno Busta?
Yep. And he easily dispatched him.
Yeah.
I mean, Tsitsipas is looking really good, so I feel good about that pick.
Next you picked?
My worry is that I still think he'll make the final, but my worry is that because there haven't been enough upsets, he's going to empty the tank to get there, and then Nadal will easily, you know, push him aside.
You don't think anyone has a shot? Well, we can get to Nadal in a second because I have another question for you. But and then team lost in the first round. What was that?
I rolled the dice on a few picks.
Okay.
And I knew there was a chance he could make the final, and I knew there was a chance he could lose in the first round. Sometimes it doesn't go your way.
So there's no threes and fours. It's only rolling ones or sixes.
Yep. He's banged up right now, and his mind is messed up at the moment. Since he won that slam, he's not competing enough right now. He's not winning enough matches. He just doesn't seem mentally in it at the moment. He needs to take some time to refine his game.
Do you think that you would if we do this again, would you potentially pick him for Wimbledon?
Not for Wimbledon, no.
That's not his
But
thing.
I'd take him for the U.S.
For
Open.
For the U.S. Open.
If he's getting back in form, I'm not going to make the mistake again if he's still... I mean, he's now at, I think, 9-9 on the year. After he was the best non-Djokovic Nadal player in the world last fall.
All right.
He needs to get back in shape.
Rublev was your third pick?
I was disappointed by that.
Who did he lose to?
I don't remember. It was in the third round.
First round?
Third round.
Oh, okay.
I thought he was an easy bet for the quarterfinals, and he tripped up early, which I was disappointed about.
Not much else to say there?
Nope.
And then you still have Schwartzman?
Schwartzman is going to play...
He's playing tomorrow morning, I think.
Okay, who is he playing tomorrow?
Struff.
Oh, yeah, J.L. Struff.
Struff?
Yeah, that's
what are we going back to the... Oh, this is our last... Well... More or less our last podcast, but should we bring back the Brissons?
Yeah.
And the Brissons?
I don't know what
all
it actually is, but that's what people on TV say. Yeah.
German?
Yeah, and Schwartzman, is he in Nadal's little...
If he wins, he will play.
Yeah,
he'll probably play. Yeah.
I think he has a shot to take a set off Nadal.
What does he have?
More than that, but...
He can't win it? Or not win the tournament. He can't beat Nadal?
I mean, two people in 15 years have done it.
You just rolled your eyes and looked with disdain at
me. He could be the next Robin Soderling, but I'm not going to bet on it. But this is exactly what I wanted from Schwartzman. It was just a cool quarterfinal.
Three or four wins?
Yep, and that's what I got.
And you got that, which you didn't get from...
Rublev.
So Tsitsipas has a shot to win the whole thing. Team was
a boomer bust pick.
What was his ceiling, did you think? Like legitimate ceiling.
Legitimate ceiling was he could make the final. He's made the finals here twice.
Okay. Rublev?
Rublev's ceiling was quarters. Didn't quite get it.
Yeah. And Schwartzman's
ceiling was quarters. Didn't
quite get it. House money at this point?
Yeah.
Do you think he beats Struff?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're actually, that's a plus one for you in that, or maybe. And then the last guy is Sinner.
He's still alive. Is he playing at all next?
He is. Yeah. Tomorrow at, it looks like, 10 a.m.?
Okay. I'm fascinated by that matchup.
Why is that?
Well, Sinner is the next big thing, and this is a chance for him to take another stab at Nadal on clay, and he's got nothing to lose.
What have they faced each other before?
I believe they played at the French last fall,
and it was a
pretty easy Nadal win. But, you know, Sinner is 18, and he's going to be the next superstar, supposedly, and so this is his opportunity to see what he can do.
In, like, 10 matches, how many times has he beaten Nadal?
I don't think he's played Nadal 10 times.
Okay, but, like, in tomorrow's match, if you play it 10 times, simulating it, how many times come out Sinner?
One.
Okay. And how many sets do you think he can get?
I mean, again, Sinner I took because when Schwartzman plays Nadal, I'm like, he's not going to beat Nadal. We've seen Schwartzman play Nadal many times. He's not going to beat him.
Just the matchup and everything? Yeah.
We just know that. Sinner is like, hey, there's a chance he could do it. He's got crazy raw talent, and he's very young.
Do you think he gets a set?
Probably not, but...
So you think it's probably going to be 3-0?
Probably. But okay. We'll see what happens.
Okay. So that's the men. Would you take your guys over Craig's guys? Like, looking back?
I think Craig probably did a little bit better, but...
Okay. All right. So we'll switch over to the women. We'll go through yours first.
Okay.
Because they won't take...
They were real bad.
They won't take quite as long. First, I need to switch the bracket on my computer and let it load. So your first pick, and I don't even have anything before the third round because I guess I could click back, but too much scrolling, and I'm not technically sound enough to do that. So Ash Barty was your first pick.
She lost in the third round because she pulled out with injury.
So she was hurt?
Yeah.
Okay. Did she have a path to go much farther?
I mean, she's the world number one, so sure.
Okay. And did you think she would have?
I mean, that's why I picked her.
Fair point. Sabalenka?
Sabalenka lost in a big upset, which is unfortunate.
Was it completely unforeseen, or was this like something that you could see? Oh, yeah,
no,
I see why
no,
she lost.
No, I mean, I thought she was going to go deeper, but this is women's tennis, lots of upsets, which is fun.
All right.
It's just not as fun when you play this kind of game.
Okay. Serena?
Serena lost today.
Right. 6-3, 7-5.
I thought the person she played really well.
Rybakina?
Yeah, Rybakina.
Rybakina.
She's interesting.
Kazakhstan.
But she's not. She's Russian.
From Russia.
But Russian tennis, I guess, wasn't giving her the proper support. So she just is
like... What does that mean?
Like, they didn't... They were giving her good coaches or something, and they, like...
I mean, are they in charge of it?
Like, they were ashamed that she was from their country or something. I don't know. But she just packed up her stuff and...
Okay.
Moved to Kazakhstan. They were talking about it today. They were like, yeah, they weren't supporting her, and like she was ashamed to be under the flag or something because they weren't giving her the right coaching.
Is that like a PR move to like just...
Well, the point is now that she has this new fan base in Kazakhstan because now she's under their flag. So now she has a lot of people.
So now a bunch of people are like, yeah.
And they have there's no competition for resources there. So
that's probably true other than Borat, right?
Yeah.
Does he play any tennis?
But she played really, really well today. And Serena's serve wasn't really working, and she's got to find her form for Wimbledon.
What do you think of her odds there?
Better than the French Open.
She's not a French. That's not her shtick.
I mean, she's good on any surface, but she's won at least 6 slams at U.S., Wimbledon, and Australia, and 3 in Paris. So. Okay,
well, that sucks when you only win 3, right? I mean, that's kind of blow at that point. Osaka was your fourth pick.
Which, unfortunate situation there, but...
Yeah, that's kind of a really loaded situation.
Yeah.
Which it probably was coming in.
Yeah. We don't need to talk about that further.
Did you think that she could have gone further, like, from a physical standpoint?
Probably, but Clay, I mean, she was another roll of the dice pick. She'd never gone past the third.
And you kind of picked her because she was, like in a draft, it's the best available, right?
She was the team pick on the women's side of just rolling the dice.
And how far has she gone generally?
Well, here she's never gone past the third, but, you know.
So she was pushing... Her.
But she was no different than Craig's Medvedev pick. It's this player is the one of the best in the world on every surface but clay, and there's a chance she figures it out.
Yeah.
but other things got in the way, etc.
Do you think that she has the game that she could be good on clay in the future?
She's the best player in the world. If she puts her mind to it, she can figure it out.
Okay, because I've never played on clay before. I mean, I've played some on, like...
It's different, but again, Medvedev's figuring it out. Roger figured it out. It's only a matter of time before she figures it out. She's too good not to.
And you think that she has the ceiling to actually win a French too?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then your last one was Andreescu?
Yeah, that was another boomer bust pick.
That's the...
More injuries in the early
Canadian rounds. Slash Romanian, is that?
Romanian parents, but raised in Canada.
Okay. And and you picked her because?
She is a very good player, but had injury concerns. I mean, also like the team pick, so.
There's a lot of
boomer bust and a lot of... It's the way it goes.
But there's also been apparently a lot of injury type things.
There's a lot of injuries in tennis.
Yeah.
If I could go back, I would take Sophia Kenin with that, but...
So, okay, that's perfectly. That's what I wanted to go into. Next is, like, outside of these, you know, people that we've talked about, is there one or two on each side who you've seen that is like, oh, yeah, that's who I should have gone with? Or, like, not like, oh, yeah, they won, so I should pick them, but who I can see why they did well.
I was taking a flyer on a boomer bust player, and I took the wrong one.
And the person would have been?
Sophia Kenin.
And what do you think of her? Because I don't know that we've talked about her before.
Well, she made the finals at the French last fall, but she's one of those players that on any given day can beat anyone and can lose to anyone. So
given her bracket, where do you think she goes?
Well, she's playing who next? American. Is she playing?
No, she beat Pagula.
Oh, right. She beat Pagula. Then who is she getting next?
Sakkari.
She's a decent player.
And then she'll either get Kostyuk or Swiatek.
She'll be playing Swiatek.
Yeah, I mean, that's, okay.
Unless Swiatek gets hurt, she'll be playing Swiatek.
Weren't you? I mean, when we were watching baseball, you and Craig were talking a lot of tennis, and you were talking about how you didn't think anyone, or maybe he was saying that you didn't think anyone was going to beat Swiatek.
I should have taken her with the first pick. I picked Barty. It was a mistake. Craig got the better of that one.
And do you think that's true? Like
look,
at this point,
look, Kenin could beat her. Someone could beat her, but I don't think anyone will.
Okay.
So I mean, Swiatek is just dismantling people. I mean, it's not even close in the matches she's playing.
And all, like, the highly ranked players are gone.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's wide open except for her. But let's be frank, what I've seen from her, it doesn't matter. Osaka could be in this tournament. Barty could be in this tournament. Halep could be in this tournament.
Yeah.
Andreescu, Serena, it doesn't matter. No one's looked as good as Swiatek. And no one's looked close. She's looked like female Rafael Nadal here. I mean, just dismantling
her people. Previous match, she almost lost the first set.
Yeah. That's the closest she's looked to mortal.
And then won 6-0.
Yeah, I mean, she's just ripping the limbs off people right now.
How old is she?
19 or something.
Really?
Yeah.
So is she the next thing?
She's definitely the next thing on clay.
Okay.
Because she won here last fall and also ripped the arms off everyone.
So this is like potentially number two in a row.
Yep.
And how has she looked on other surfaces?
Hasn't gotten to play a ton on other surfaces yet, but nothing as good as this.
Because she's so young?
It's just like, wow.
So is she... must watch for the rest of this tournament?
Well, if you're watching the finals, you'll probably see her there.
All right. Well, that's been interesting. We've gotten some feedback, and people have liked sort of this tennis draft stuff. I think it's interesting. I think that, you know, with the timing and everything, if we could do the Wimbledon, that would be fun. I've certainly learned a lot from listening to you guys. You guys both clearly know a lot about tennis and have a lot of experience, not only playing, but judging it. And you are apparently a tennis scout from... just like every other sport that you claim not to be. But all right, one last mini segment that we'll do is let's touch up on some NHL stuff. First, let's talk quick. We don't have to be very long, but the lottery goes almost chalk. Is that weird?
Well, it's not as weird because they changed the lottery rules.
Okay.
Or they were only auctioning off two picks versus three. So statistically, there's less chance of things getting weird when you're only doing two ping pong balls.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was one of the... least weird. I mean, because when they went to the three ping pong balls, 17, 18, 19, 20, a team in the teens won one of the three slots every year.
What did you say to me? If the Rangers win it again, you're going to...
burn down the NHL offices.
Even though if there's a year to win it, it's not this year.
Correct, but they were the worst odds with 1%. At 1 and 1% at 2, and they have won the lottery twice in a row.
That seems...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But thankfully it didn't happen, so...
No, they...
No violence.
No violence from Alex. I've never seen you be violent.
But Buffalo is going to get Owen Power. Congrats to Buffalo.
More or less done deal.
Not congrats to Owen Power.
Isn't that what did Mel tweet? He tweeted something.
Oh,
like,
Mel was getting a little interesting on Twitter.
Mel's like, he's going to look great in that uniform in the fall
of 2022. Yeah.
What do you think of that?
Well, if Mel's saying that, then...
Well, but don't you think that's some like...
So here's the thing with Buffalo.
Yeah.
Buffalo is at a crossroads where they can either trade Eichel and Reinhardt in the summer, or they cannot. And
good call, Alex.
Hypothetical about any player, but
yeah.
If they move Eichel and Reinhardt,
uh-huh.
there is not a chance in the world Power is on their team next year, at least in my thought.
He just like goes full Elway and is like, nope.
Which, by the way, is what they should do. Eichel and Reinhardt should be traded, but that's a different discussion.
Because of maximum value?
Because
they're not going anywhere.
They're at
their
peaks, and there is not a competitive team around them, and you can get a haul for them right now.
Sort of like what we were talking about in our seven-hour prep today about what the White Sox did.
The White Sox didn't keep trying to build around Chris Sale. They flipped him for crazy amounts of assets.
And now it's paying dividends.
Yeah, that's what Buffalo should do. However, if you're going to keep them and you're going to talk yourself into being a playoff contender...
Which, I mean, how do you go from one to playoff contender without winning the lottery plural times like the Rangers?
Well, you go from that... I mean, number one, they were extremely unlucky this year in shooting luck, injury luck, etc.
Yeah.
They were a lot worse than they actually were. But if you're going to do that and you're going to bring Eichel and Reinhardt back, you better push for the playoffs now because these are as good as these guys are ever going to get. So you got to get talent around them right now.
Because Eichel's been around for about 6 years now.
Yeah. He's going to be 25 next year. So this is your time to go all in. So if you're going all in, you might as well put Power on the roster because this is your time to go all in.
What do you think they're going to do?
I don't know. I mean, their owner appears to be a marionette puppet for the Pegula family.
Does he have the strength?
I mean, if you read his comments after the draft lottery, he's like, I'm so happy about this. The Pegula family have done so much for Buffalo, and they deserve this. Not the fans, not the team, but the Pegula family deserve this. I mean, and he was like on the business side. He wasn't even on the hockey side,
like
and they made
government.
Him GM. I mean, I would not feel great about him as your GM if I were Buffalo.
Yeah. All right. And then
Seattle gets two. Anaheim,
so they move up one spot.
Yep. Anaheim gets three. They drop one. And then it goes the rest of the way down.
In order. So, I mean, is Beniers going too?
Don't know. Tough to know. I mean, there was a great clip from Steve Yzerman's post-draft lottery press conference where a guy who shall be not named, because he will block me on Twitter if I name him, but a notoriously terrible writer, asked Steve Yzerman.
Are you saying this guy listens to this podcast?
I don't know if he does, but
ooh,
he...
we have fans.
He says, do you think that this draft is really unsettled after the first couple picks? And Yzerman says, I don't know about the first couple picks. And he said, well, you know, whatever it is, and I don't remember what exactly he said, but... No, he said, I'm asking you, what do you think after the first picks? And he said, no, I'm asking you, who goes number one? And the guy goes, well, I think Owen Power. And he's like, okay, what about number two? And the guy's like, let's say Edvinson from Sweden. And Yzerman goes, interesting, we'll note that.
Do you think Yzerman set him up that whoever he said there, he was going to have the same response?
Yeah, no question.
It didn't matter who he said.
So the point is, no one knows what's going to happen after number one.
Yeah.
And if you ask most internet scouts, Power shouldn't be going number one.
Well,
but most teams think he should, and it seems pretty much a lock at this point.
Okay.
So we don't know where Beniers is going. We don't know where Kent Johnson's going. But
and then we
could be on any number of teams.
Hughes, too, right?
Correct.
So, but it sounds like they're all going to go probably top 10.
Probably.
Okay. And there's a chance that Hughes and Beniers both go top five.
Yep.
So it's definitely going to be an interesting first hour or so from a Michigan perspective.
Yep. And if you live in Canada, go to the newsstand and pick up the Hockey News cover that's got the Michigan Mafia on the cover.
Really?
It's got Beniers, Power, and KJ on the cover in their Michigan uniform. It's pretty cool.
And mail one to us.
Yeah. They don't sell the Hockey News in the U.S. anymore.
Really?
Yeah, it's only online in the U.S. But
Well, we can use a printer, right? So there is sort of some big things going on. All right, so you're going to see those guys probably go high. We're not sure the exact spots, obviously, because we are not crystal balls. But what about the Wings? I know I'm not a Wings fan, but I know you are. And so are you okay with what happened to the Wings?
I was happy that they didn't move down because that's happened all the time. And
were their odds of moving down better than moving up?
It always is.
Okay. So you escaped that bullet, I guess.
And I think the choices at 6 are a little better than at 8, let's say.
So who's their ceiling pick at 6?
So I feel like Power will go at 1. I feel like Beniers will go between 2 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about Luke Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
He might be there. I think Edvinson will go top 5, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think Gunther will go close to top 5. Those were the guys that were high in the McKenzie rankings.
Mm-hmm.
So I think at minimum, you will have a pick of one of Eklund, Clark, Hughes, something in that group, and you can take your pick.
Who is, like, from what you've seen, if they got to pick anyone outside of, or who's the best possible player that they could get? Like, not power dropping, but, like, who could you could see legitimately being there? Who would you be like, yeah, I'll take that right now?
I think Clark is a really high-caliber guy who's got a chance to have a higher ceiling than a lot of defensemen in the draft.
Would you take him over Hughes?
Maybe.
Okay. And then
I'd be fine with Luke Hughes. I'd be fine with William Eklund.
If they pick someone that isn't, like, completely, you know, random, who would you be like, oh, I can't believe this is...
Well, I mean, lots of people think the Red Wings are going to pick Jesper Wallstedt, but that's mostly the same reason people thought the Red Wings were going to pick Spencer Knight, which was like, well, this seems like something Steve Yzerman would do, even though they have no real evidence before. But it's just like, well, this...
But who would you be disappointed in?
I mean, I just don't like the idea of taking a goalie at number 6.
Okay.
So...
But goalie at 6 in the second round? Fine?
Sure.
Okay.
I think in this draft you could take goalie at 16.
Would you trade down?
No one trades down in the NHL. Not in the top 10.
Teams try to trade up at a certain point, right?
You get that in the teens, in the 20s. You don't get that in the top 10.
Okay.
There hasn't been a major trade in the top 10-ish in a long time that I can remember.
Okay. So that's like the lottery summation, I would guess, for right now. Probably Johnson goes, what, top 10, top 12?
Between 6 and 10, likely.
All right. And so that's your 4 Michigan guys. All right. So let's just quickly walk through each of these series. The East is tight games, overtime, or right at the end. Boston seems to kind of outplay the Islanders, but I wrote down the Islanders was built for the playoffs. They get pretty good defense. They're in the right place. They have Trotz as their coach, goaltending, and hey, guess who's finally arrived in the playoffs? Matt Barzal.
Yeah, he had a good game yesterday.
And his second goal, and he had that great assist. Is this one still up for grabs?
I think Boston wins in 7.
In 7 now. Because previously, last week, you said 5.
Yep.
But you think
the Islanders do what they do, which is that they turn every game into a coin flip.
And you think they win one of the next two, and then it comes down to game at the New Garden?
Yep.
All right, yeah. And none of these games have been blowouts. They're all super tight.
The Islanders don't play in a lot of blowouts.
Great games, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is what you want from playoff hockey, if for the neutral. The North, this is weird. Like... First of all, you predicted the Leafs were going to win. That didn't really happen. There's a lot to unpack, I think, with the Leafs. We could probably do an entire podcast on that.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are 10 podcasts out there that talk about Leafs hockey.
There are 30 podcasts.
There are 30 podcasts that talk about it. Aren't even worth listening to?
I mean, you can just watch the Toronto Sports Network, TSN, as everyone who's not from Toronto calls it. But
that's actually pretty funny. So you have Montreal, who was the worst team to come into the playoffs, right? They had the fewest points.
Yeah.
And then you have Winnipeg, who, I don't know, overtimes their way through the first round. And then now all of a sudden you have the two worst teams in hockey, which ironically is almost perfect because the winner's going to play the winner of the series that has the two best teams in hockey, or at least in the regular season. In the regular season. So you get the matchup that probably is right and fair, but, all right.
Let's just say that when you watch Montreal Winnipeg play and then you watch Tampa Carolina or Vegas Colorado, they're not playing the same sport. It's not even...
Montreal, I mean, Carey Price is playing out of his mind.
He's playing really well.
He did against Toronto, and he has in the first couple games against Winnipeg.
Montreal is playing very well.
Montreal as a whole is.
Yep.
Winnipeg is just devastated with injuries.
And Mark Scheifele.
And the Scheifele suspension. So Stastny didn't play in the first two games, and Kopp is like their 2C right now,
yep.
Which is like a bit of a stretch for him, I would say. And
I mean, Dylan DeMello's hurt. Best defenseman, even though he's not that great to begin with.
And their defense in game two, despite only giving up one goal, was like kind of all over the
their
place.
Their defense is horrifying. Whereas Montreal plays very disciplined defense.
Yeah.
And Carey Price, he had good moments against Toronto, no question.
Right.
Certainly game six overtime. But like in game seven, how many great saves did Price make?
He wasn't
like
really challenged,
two?
Was he?
No, I mean, like, they've got the Deneau line, which is a phenomenal shot-suppressing line.
Yeah.
And their defense are big and clunky, and they don't give up a lot of chances. And they're just clicking right now. Suzuki's woken back up. They had a lot of injuries, which forced them to play their best player, Cole Caulfield.
Cole Caulfield doesn't play for the first, like, two games of the playoffs.
Yeah.
And then they realize, oh, I guess we had, like, a trade deadline acquisition that we can throw in halfway through the series.
I mean, it's...
And
it's,
have they taken him out since?
No.
And how has he been?
It's just... I don't even know how... The mind of how people work, but, like... You watch him play, and it's like, this guy is a lot better than a lot of these other players, and you can tell that immediately. How he wasn't in the lineup to begin the series, I mean...
So
they have a largely incompetent coach and a largely incompetent general manager who are now winning.
Going to get him to the Final Four.
Are now winning, and they're going to be forced to extend them both.
I remember
it's
you saying that.
It's just glorious.
So, Sue, Craig's wife, and I've been watching a bunch of NHL this year, and... She comes up to me one day, and it was halfway through the Montreal series, and she's like, hey, that Caulfield guy, he's playing in the playoffs, isn't he? And I was like, well, now. And she's like, yeah, he's pretty good. And I'm like, hey, you figured that out.
They've got...
But the entire Montreal organization has apparently had no idea, despite like signing him and then playing him in the regular season.
They've got Guy Fieri's thin French cousin as their coach, and who was put in mid-season.
And I kind of believe that's actually true.
No idea what he's doing.
Is he actually his cousin?
No.
Oh, but he could be.
I mean, he's got the weird white hair.
But
that's
you
like
believe
in
it,
tips,
right?
And
yeah. So they're going to win the series, right?
Probably.
Like,
they're now up 2-0, and they're coming back home. And Scheifele's out for a couple more
two
games.
Two more games.
Yeah.
So even if they split at home. I mean, Winnipeg's probably higher ceiling in some ways, but like they just don't have the depth. I mean, if they get Stastny back and... I mean, that changes things a little bit, but they're probably going to have to... I mean, Hellebuck is, what, going to have to steal a couple games, you think?
Probably.
Yeah. So then in the Central, this is like one of the two sort of dream matchups that we were hoping for would happen. The first thing I wrote down is, this was before the game yesterday, but is road teams, and then outplayed team is kind of what you talked to me about
until yesterday.
Before. Until
Tampa
yesterday.
Tampa was the better team yesterday.
And Tampa wins like a... shootout.
I wasn't watching the game. I saw the condensed game highlights. And that
like
second period was on cocaine. There was like 10 goals in the second period. At one point, I believe it was like 7 of the last 17 shots have gone in the net between the two teams.
Which is like the hockey you were describing to me from the 80s.
Yeah, it was wild for a period of time.
But Carolina has home ice and they play really well, outplay them more or less for two games, lose both of them, go to Tampa, get outplayed and still win in game three, keeping the series alive. And then Tampa just like goes off and just blisters the net.
Tampa, it's just not fair. It's how many guys they have.
Yeah.
Like they
didn't even play like a couple of them in this regular
season.
They
are so deep and they get in. I mean, their power play is just ripping teams apart.
Yeah.
And they move it. They move the puck so well. And
is Cooper the best coach? I mean, or does he just have the most talent?
He has the most talent by far.
But do you like him?
Probably by far. Maybe close with Colorado, but anyway.
Okay. So then you mentioned something else to me that, you know, and this was sort of true for Vegas. Now, that series has turned around a little bit after the last period or game and a half, but you said that Carolina is sort of gaming the analytics systems, and you mentioned about how they like to take shots that the analytics love, so they look really good. They don't always put the puck in the net.
Well, Carolina is a team that's long been known in analytics circles as a team that underperforms their expected goals by
long,
a lot.
Long been meaning?
Like for several years now. This is an ongoing thing.
Okay.
They take a lot of shots. They take a lot, and analytics models like lots of shots, and then it says that they're kind of creating more chances than they are, but they still create a lot of chances, but they just, at times, they struggle to score.
And is that come down to like what we would call like finishing, like guys
to some extent
who can score, like goals?
Extent.
People call them goal scorers.
They've played well this series, but Tampa's just a little bit better at every position, and that's the tough part.
Well, I mean that's going to be true in most series, right?
And they're not. I mean, they got Peter Mrazek to steal Game 3 for them, but they also had Nedeljkovic give Game 1 away from them.
So, all right, obviously the Islanders could beat Boston, but assuming Boston does win, even if it is in 7. What kind of series do you expect them to potentially give Tampa? I mean, can they beat Tampa? I mean, I'm not asking you from like, is it possible? But like from a realistic standpoint.
If you are Colorado or Vegas, you want the Islanders to beat Boston badly. Or sorry, no, you want Boston to beat the Islanders badly. If you're Tampa, you want the Islanders to win.
Right.
Because Boston would drain Tampa quite a bit. I mean, my concern with Tampa is that they may well be the best team, but by the time they get to the finals, if they're there, they will have played so much hockey in the past year that
because
I think
the
they're going to be out of gas.
Yeah. And because there's a good chance that they're, even if they play the Islanders, I mean, the way the Islanders play, there's that series is probably still going to go 5, maybe 6, depending on, I mean, last year.
But the Islanders don't tax you. They're not like making you skate a lot.
But even if you have to play more games.
Yeah, to some extent.
I mean, the series last year went 6, right?
Yeah.
And it was overtime.
The Islanders
that could have gone 7.
The Islanders are just going to be a gnat on you when you're swatting and, you know, get away from it.
Depends
me,
if
right?
you hit it or not.
Yeah. Like.
Yeah. So, but and as we previously discussed, which we'll get into in a second with Colorado and Vegas, is that the winner of that series is going to play the Canadian team.
Yeah.
And that team is going to be significantly worse than either one of those teams.
Yeah, they have to hope it's Winnipeg. They're better than either team, but the Canadiens are the only team that could even do anything notable. Winnipeg would be a sweep, I think.
You think Winnipeg? Okay, especially
I think
without
Winnipeg is so bad.
Well, they don't have their players in some senses, right?
In some senses, but
and obviously they'll have Scheifele back if they win, if they get to the series.
Scheifele isn't going to stop them from giving up 13 breakaways per game.
So, well, what do you think Montreal could do against either one of those teams?
Montreal could be interesting just because they're going to do what you don't want, which is they're going to bog it down and put 5 guys at the blue line and try to get you offside.
Is that Arizona-esque?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's not a crazy analog, is it, with a better goalie maybe?
With a better goalie and with better scorers potentially, with
because,
the way they're clicking right
because
now.
Because both Colorado and Vegas played Arizona this year, and they both lit them up. I mean,
I think
Colorado lost one game, maybe Vegas lost a game, but like it was, I mean, that's where both these teams racked up the points is by beating the California teams and also Arizona, despite the style of play. So, I mean, like, would you be surprised if...
But Montreal's a better team than Arizona.
So, I mean, do you think Montreal can win that series?
No, but it would be interesting.
Do you
maybe.
Think it goes 6?
No, I mean, I think it would be 5, but maybe it could be 7. Who knows?
Do you want to pick any other numbers? What about 3? Can it be 3, Alex? All right, so now off to Colorado and Vegas. They're going to play Game 4 in a matter of hours. Colorado eviscerates them in Game 1. Game 2, Vegas bounces back after the first period, mostly outplays them, but Colorado gets the finishing. There were penalty complaints on both sides, but in the end, probably washes.
What game are we talking about?
Game 2.
Game 2, Vegas was a better team.
Sure.
In the end.
In the end, but...
Colorado was better in the first half.
But Vegas has the chance to win it with that late power play.
Yep.
They don't.
Then Colorado,
Colorado gets theirs,
the makeup
and they
call
win
and
it.
Then, yep.
And they win it. And, you know, should either of those calls been made? I don't know. You know, you get tired, you said, about people on Twitter complaining about NHL refs, and I get it. And there's different ways. This has always been a thing. It's the same way with the end of games in the NBA and basketball is like, you know, do you call the foul on the drive and all that kind of stuff. The reality of this is that, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how Colorado bounces back because Game 3, Vegas clearly outplays them. Colorado is 5 minutes from a 3-0 lead and gives up a goofy goal off of a bank shot from behind him by Marchessault, behind Grubauer from Marchessault to tie the game. Pacioretty scores a phenomenal tip goal that I don't think anyone can do anything about, and it's it ends up being 3-2. Colorado actually has a decent 6-on-5, and Mikko
has a great chance
to tie the game. I don't know that they win in overtime, but you never know. So the interesting thing to me is that Vegas has started skating Colorado, and that's something that did not look like it would happen in the regular season and also in game one. Part of it is people are in Avs circles are saying Bowen Byram, who has been healthy, needs to be in the game because he actually can get the puck out of the zone. He, you know, he can skate, he can pass. He is not Connor Timmins or Patrick Nemeth. And that changes. The Avs, I think, also really need Kadri back. That's not going to happen until at least game six or seven. So they're in, you know, JT Compher's their 3C at this point, and that's not going to cut it against Vegas. Jost has held his own to some extent, but I don't know. I mean, Vegas basically said, we need to play better in game two, and our players need to come out harder, and they did. And now Bednar said the same thing about Colorado. Is like, I don't even care about statistics. We haven't competed in two games, and if this team has any sort of cup dreams, then they better start to actually care and play in game four. So tonight is going to be really interesting. And if Colorado can skate with them, I don't even think they have to win the game, but they have to be able to skate with them and play at that level, because they do have games five and seven at home, which they can win, but they are going to need a better performance than in the last game and a half.
I mean, this is another sort of whoever wins this game, you know, it really changes it. Just because if Colorado wins tonight, the series is probably over.
More or less.
If Vegas wins, I think it's a 50-50 series.
Well, you mean because it's 2-2, Alex?
Well, no, in the sense that I think it's a total toss-up at that point.
I think that Colorado doesn't need to win it. I mean, yeah, in some ways they do. But they need to show that they can not be dominated like they have the past game and a half.
Yeah, I mean, Vegas really struggled to find their feet for a period of time, and then it just clicked, and are just going at them.
The end of the game the end of the second and into the third was different in the last game for Colorado. They blended the lines and they created a few chances, and they looked like they could skate a little bit more with Vegas. Then they get the lead and they go into protect mode with 5 minutes left, which isn't maybe 8 minutes left, which isn't the wrong move when you have a good defense and a hot goalie. Is you don't want to get caught out. You want to play around your strength, and you know they just Grubauer's off his post, and you get sort of this like weird chance where Marchessault has a look and the puck rolls off his stick to the corner and he throws it back and banks it in, and then now it's a tie game.
I mean, that wasn't that fluky necessarily. I mean, Grubauer's got to hug the post there.
No, I agree. That was...
I mean, Grubauer was great in that game, and then the two goals he gives up, not great.
Well, the third one was...
I mean, why is he standing up there?
Well...
It was, you know, again, I mean, he is the reason they win game two.
Yes.
He's the reason they're in game three. You know, nothing to say there, but that was very weird.
Do you...
minute was like, whoa, boy.
Who has played better, him or Fleury?
It's been pretty even. They've both been really good when they've needed to be.
That's crazy, isn't it? I mean, you have probably two of the most talented teams, two of the fastest teams, two of the most pick-your-adjective teams, and then they both have maybe the two best goalies in the playoffs?
Vasilevsky's been better than either of them.
Has he? Has he had to face that stuff?
He's been really good.
Okay. Well,
he's been really,
okay,
really
but
good.
Two of the three best then.
Yeah.
Fine. But I mean that's fascinating. Usually you get teams like that, you know, you have one of them that doesn't have like an A+ goalie, and both of them seem to.
Yeah.
What do you see a key in this?
Vegas has got to finish their chances a little better.
Because they've been getting them, but they haven't been. Do you think that there's luck to the post? I mean, people talk about that, you know, like
Be a good idea to stop putting Colorado on the power play.
Well,
or change things up a little bit.
But that's going to happen, right? Like, you're going to commit penalties in a game, and they're... I mean, that's the whole discussion sort of we had last week about evening things out.
I'm a big fan of the way Vegas played their power play or penalty kill for most of the year, but I think you might have to do the old style here.
Like, pack the zone?
Where you just get four guys, and they just park in front of the net.
And just have limbs everywhere?
Yeah. No cross seam passes, just skate around the outside and shoot from way away, and we hope we'll block your shot. Because when you put pressure on the puck handler and the puck handler has the ability to beat the forechecker, they can just rip you right open.
And that's
exactly what Tampa's done to Carolina, and it's exactly what Colorado's done to Vegas.
So Carolina has a similar aggressive penalty kill?
Yeah.
And that hasn't... But, I mean, is anything going to stop Tampa? I mean, that power play is...
Yeah, their power play is really good, but you got to take away the cross seam pass, and that's how Tampa has just shredded Carolina.
Can you line four guys up in a row?
Yeah.
All right, well, that's your NHL wrap-up. We've gone a little longer. Look, this is probably going to be our last podcast. We've discussed previously about how We would do another one if there's something to talk about, if like Michigan hockey releases a schedule, or maybe there's a tennis thing, or there's a couple things that come up. Maybe there'll even be some great NHL stuff. You and I each don't have insane plans the rest of summer, so we would be available. I've enjoyed doing this with you. I hope you've had a good time and you've liked it. I look forward to these hours that we get to hang out and talk. I think you've done a really good job. I didn't really know you before this happened, and I think that you've like blown my expectations out of the water. I appreciate all your insights, but also your ability to talk about many things.
It's been a fun season.
So we would potentially do a couple more throughout the season. We've talked about some off-the-wall ideas, too. You know, we'll see what happens. But this is probably our last one. It's gone, I would say, what, 2 months longer than we originally planned? I mean, we planned on covering hockey, and then there was one thing after another, and
yep.
You know, maybe one of our episodes can just be a replay of all of your crazy calls throughout the year of like different sports on WCBN.
Maybe.
But so thank you, Alex. Thank you to our listeners. Thanks to our sponsors and people who've helped put us together. We went 27 episodes, which yep. is like, I don't know if we've done 27 episodes combined for everything else. I think we've done about that. So it's been a good year. Thanks again, buddy.
Yep. Listening to Michigan Hockey Cast 3.27 for Alex Drain, David Nasternak. Have a good summer, and so long.